With Redefine Ed, the podcast, I'm Travis Pillow. How can Congress expand educational options without dictating education policy to the states? Recently, Congressman Luke Messer discussed that very question and more with our guest interviewer, Denisha Merriweather.
Hello and welcome to Redefine, your home for news about parental school choice and education reform.
This is Denisha Merriweather with Redefine Ed. I'm joined with Congressman Luke Messer. He was the former president of School Choice Indiana and founded the Congressional School Choice Caucus in 2014. I'm really excited to be talking with you today, Congressman. How are you?
Hi, Denisha. I'm doing great. Great to hear your voice. I think the last time we were together was in Cleveland, wasn't it?
On the panel.
There talking about these issues. So excited to talk to you today.
Thank you. Let's dive on in. Conservatives, they tend to believe in limited government and education. So why did you think a group like the School Choice Caucus was important?
Yeah, I mean, if you boil out what it takes to be successful in America today, it all starts with an education. And if you look at the founding document of our government, the Declaration of Independence, it says that we're all endowed by our Creator with certain inalienable rights, rights that can't be taken away, that include the right to pursue happiness. So if we're going to fulfill that God-given promise in modern life, we've got to give every kid in America access to a quality education. And as you mentioned, for many Republicans over the last couple decades, our education policy is in some ways started, and for some folks even ended, with just abolishing the Department of Education, the idea of getting the federal government out of education completely. In some ways, I'm sympathetic to that idea in this way, that if you read the Constitution, there's no federal Department of Education mentioned there. And I do think that these decisions are best made at the local level. But what struck me is when you look at all the billions of dollars that are being spent, it would be much better spent if it was in the hands of parents and parents were able to decide. I know your life story is a story of somebody who has benefited from choice. So I don't want to create a federal department of school choice, but I do want to take the existing dollars that are being spent and maybe better utilize it by taking it out of the hands of the federal bureaucracy and put it in the hands of parents.
And yes, my godmother, she really took advantage of the tax credit scholarship down here in Florida to send me to a good private school. So she really did. She was empowered to take advantage and, you know, send me to a good school. You talked about that too at the RNC with limited government, and you mentioned that again that you didn't want to start a federal department of school choice. What do you think a federal policy would be that could encourage states to create more school choice programs but not necessarily enhance the federal role?
Yeah, I mean, so let me give you one example. And it's legislation we put forward that would take Title I dollars that are federal dollars that are typically used for economically disadvantaged kids and say that those billions of dollars should be on a state-by-state basis. In other words, if state leaders decided, could be used to supplement the kind of tax credit program that you participated in Florida or that folks across the country are participating in. And my belief is that, you know, we still need to continue to have some education regulations that ensure that kids are getting high quality options, but those are much better handled at the local and state level by leaders that live there, that know the students, and have their best interests at heart.
In 2011, you were the president of School Choice Indiana. You guys did a lot of reforms and got a lot of them passed at one time. And today, Indiana is like the largest voucher program in the country. 5 years later, looking back, how do you think that approach went with getting a lot of things passed at once?
Well, it was exciting. I mean, under Tony Bennett's leadership, there were a whole host of reforms that were brought forward, many of them at the same time. And, you know, it created some concern. But I think when you look at the results multiple years later, it's hard to argue with the outcome. There are now multiple hundred thousand students in Indiana who are in one way or another engaged in alternative schools, some in charter schools, some in magnet schools, some in virtual schools, some homeschooled, as you mentioned, we have one of the largest private school choice programs in the country with almost 33,000 students in that program alone. And the big lesson to me, and you're an example of this, when you came and testified at the education committee in Washington, D.C., we did a meeting yesterday where we had families come in and talk about what school choice had done for them. We see these big numbers, hundreds of thousands of people, and it's easy to forget that each one of them has their own story, right? Each one of them is a real child with real parents or grandparents or aunts and uncles that are raising them, that are able now to unlock opportunity in their life because they have access. Access, by the way, that already exists for millions of people across America, if you can afford it. In other words, we already have school choice in America for families that can afford it. If you can afford to move or afford to pay for a private school on your own, you have those options. The only real question is, what are we going to do for everyone else? And I believe Indiana's success story, this is the success stories in Florida that you've experienced, there's, you know, across the country, is an example of what we can do if we get our priorities right.
Yeah, most definitely. Indiana they have a really good amount of school choice options. So what can Congress do to, you know, expand those when they already have so many?
So again, I think the key is the policy objective should be empowering parents. And while the dollars per student that come from the federal government are a relatively small percentage, it turns out that about 90% of the money that's spent on any individual child in America today is state and local money, and about 10% of it is federal. But it's still billions of dollars because the federal government impacts the entire country. So what I believe the best options are is to open up the opportunity for the dollars that are being spent to be used for families, and allowing state and local leaders to best shape what that looks like. Some states have robust public charter school programs and really no other choice option. Some states have a tax credit program like the one that you described in Florida. Indiana's program still is scholarship driven, you know, what some call vouchers. So what our legislation does is just give states the option to use those federal dollars that way. Some states may choose to not use it that way at all. I mean, Connecticut, for example, is a place I think where there's not a whole lot of school choice options for folks that can't pay for it on their own. We're not going to force them to use the Florida model or the Indiana model or the Milwaukee model or the Arizona model, but we do want to open up the opportunities for innovation. I continue to believe we're on the verge of a new age in educational opportunity in America. And a lot of it is being led by advocates like you.
So before we hop into your bill, I want to ask you, where did your passion for school choice come from? Where was it birthed? When did this happen? You know?
Well, thank you. I mean, it's one thing you and I really share is, you know, we just know this stuff can work. And so it's important that we try and fight for it. You know, my basic background is this. I was raised in a single parent family by a mom who just retired from a local factory in a small town in Indiana. I'm a product of public schools, the Greensburg public school system. But if you'd have met my family in 1975, that's when I was six, we certainly didn't look like a definite, you know, a picture of guaranteed success. But but I knew, and I was told by my mom, if I worked hard and stayed focused, anything could happen in America. Who knows? You might even grow up and become a congressman or something like that, right? And so
look at you now.
Look at me now. And so from that time, honestly, from the parents and teachers and coaches who helped shape my future, because in the community I grew up in, you know, it's an old African proverb that got a little politicized when Hillary Clinton wrote a book with this title, but it's the African proverb is, it takes a village to raise a child.
Right?
And I lived it. I mean, I've seen it in my small town in Greensburg. And from all of that, this came a passion and belief that every kid in America could succeed if they had access to the opportunities it takes to make that a reality. And so as a state legislator, I got engaged in education issues, learned more about school choice, and that was really what got me hooked on this topic.
That's awesome. And it really does take a village. And even with my own story, there were so many people along the way that kind of imparted in me, and being able to go to a good school was like the icing on the cake, you know? So that's really beautiful. I love it. So let's dive and talk about your bill. So you have this Enhancing Educational Opportunities for All Students Act, and it gives students the option to let federal Title I dollars follow children to whatever school they attend. And so do you think that portability will increase private and voucher schools' ability to better educate low-income students?
Well, yeah, I do, and I think it'll help motivate them. And so my hope is that if you give parents access and you give innovative thinkers out there the knowledge that if they build a better mousetrap, that, you know, folks can come, that we can make big things happen. As you've talked about in our bill, taking the $1 billion of Title I money and empowering parents is a big part of it. We also have some other options in there that help middle-class families. Mm-hmm. There's Coverdell education savings accounts are something that is available under current federal tax law. And we want to lift the cap of $2,000 per child and let people use those dollars in a tax-free way. Also, 529s are in your higher education pursuits. You know, 529s have historically been accounts that are used to help pay for higher education. We believe the tax law should be changed so that those $529 can be used in K-12 education, mm-hmm, as well. And so our hope is to help a cross-section of families that are struggling to make those choice options. Because, you know, we talk a lot about those that are truly in poverty, and that's what mostly Title I dollars go to. But there are all kinds of families in America who would like to have a different option, but, you know, struggle to make, mm-hmm, to be able to pay for that. And we want to empower those parents too.
Yeah, most definitely. And that's one of the great things about this bill, is that it focuses on both classes. You know, you have low income and you have the middle class, where because some low income and middle class families alike, they can't afford, you know, private school tuition. Are there any other bills in Congress that are trying to expand school choice?
Yeah, you know, Senator Tim Scott, who's a great dynamic senator from South Carolina, has a bill that would allow parents of disabled children who get funds through the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act to use that money to send their child to the school of their choice. Senator McCain has a bill working its way through the Senate now that provides better educational options for Native American students. There's a lot of challenges in the schools that are provided now in the tribal lands across America. There's legislation that's Tim Scott's talked about that would help veterans or folks that are serving in the military that are looking for choice options, because in some bases across America, their only option is a local public school that may be otherwise a failing school. We think if you're serving in the military, you ought to have a right to be able to make sure you're sending your child to a school that you're comfortable with. And then recently in what they out here in Washington call ESSA, but is essentially the rewrite of the No Child Left Behind Act, Congress established a pilot program to test out the idea of weighted student funding or student-centered funding. Under this concept, basically a base amount of funding is devoted for each student, mm-hmm, and additional funds or weights are then provided for students who need additional services, such as low-income or disabled students. Schools that receive that funding based on the number of students that enroll, and if a student moves from one school to another, the receiving school gets the money. Our hope is that pilot program would prove that portability of federal funds can work, and it provides equity, transparency, flexibility, and ultimately choice for families. So anyway, those are some of the other options that are out there. I believe, again, that this national wave that's come in the world of educational opportunity for every child is coming to Washington in a much bigger way soon.
Most definitely. So there's a deadline approaching with the DC Voucher Opportunity Scholarship. And when do you think that'll happen?
Well, I'm hopeful it'll happen yet before the end of the year. We're working with the leadership, the Oversight and Government Reform Committee, where this actually goes, because the Oversight and Government Reform Committee handles Washington, D.C. governance and the Appropriations Committee to push forward for full authorization of the D.C. OSP program. You know, it's an important program. 90% of kids in that program succeed. It's been overwhelmingly popular in that community, and it ought to continue. We're optimistic we can get something across the finish line as Congress works their agenda this year.
Nice. The D.C. voucher is, you know, at the nation's capital, and it's really important. Why do you think folks like me who's from Florida, who don't live in Washington, should be concerned about what's at stake?
One, I think we all want to live in an America where every kid gets a chance to go to a great school, and the kids that live in Washington, D.C. ought to have an opportunity to go to a great school, too. You know, by the way, I'm a product of public schools. Many kids across America wake up, go to their local public school, and it's a great opportunity. But for too many, it's just not. And so we can't rest as a nation until everybody has a chance. I think for the broader debate, it's important this program continue because it's been such a successful one. I mean, there's local demand. The results of the kids that are in the program have been through the roof positive. And to see that program go away after a decade plus of success would be a real setback for the broader choice movement, the broader educational opportunity movement. But my call is hopefully that we will in D.C. move beyond just the local D.C. voucher program and look at some of these other ideas we've had a chance to talk about today that would expand educational opportunity all across our country. I'm convinced it will happen because I'm convinced the American people are going to demand it over time with advocates like you, people who've lived this, who've walked the walk and walk your talk. There's just no end to what we can accomplish for America's young people.
Most definitely. Do you think that the debate over the D.C. voucher is like a gauge for people in Congress's attitude towards school choice?
I think it is in one way, at least the belief that we ought to have those kind of programs here in Washington, D.C. You know, it's been a little convenient for people over the last several decades to be able to say, well, I'm for choice for the kids in Washington, D.C., but I'm not necessarily for that back in my home state. And I think that's a paradigm shift that we've got to yet make in Congress, that what's good for the young people here in Washington, D.C. is frankly good for kids all across this country. And I believe, as we talked about from the outset, we have a moral responsibility as a nation to make sure every kid in America has the opportunity to go to a good school.